again, at the start, I'm like, oh, it's got to be special. It's got to be different. I've got to be able to put my stamp on it. And the one that is the most popular is the absolute just standard, probably what your grandma used to make. And that's what everyone goes nuts for. So that's what we're going with. Again, that's that. Well, it's not about what I think I might want to do. But what do the people want?
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. Cafes have become the lifeblood of the hospitality sector in Australia, a part of everyday life. But how different are cafes in small towns and regional centres compared to the bigger cities? Hayley Hammond is a chef and co-owner of Relish Cafe in Highfields, Queensland. Hayley, how are you?
I'm good, thanks.
It's great to get you on the show. You're doing some amazing things there in Highfields. How are things going at the moment?
Really good. We're going into our third year and finally feeling like we might have some idea what we're doing.
Third year brings back memories of a certain period of time. An interesting time to take over a cafe or start a cafe.
Yeah.
Take us back to that, to when you sort of found the site and it all started.
We weren't planning on opening a cafe during COVID. Doesn't sound like a great idea. We were looking into a different venture, which was just taking over the kitchen at a little pub in town. Probably wasn't the greatest idea, but it was something we could get into easily. And my business partner happened to be on Facebook and saw this cafe on Marketplace, which you never expect to find a viable business on Marketplace. So we called them up, went and had a look, came home, drank a bottle of wine and negotiated a price over the phone that night.
What sort of period of time during COVID was this?
My memory is shocking for these kind of details. Look, it was towards the end when things were easing off, and we figured we knew the worst of it, so we could go in at least knowing how bad things could get.
Yeah. Well, what was it like when you first sort of got the keys and started running the cafe, given that that wasn't originally your plan?
We had been talking about when we get our place for years. That was just a constant conversation. So we thought we had a bit of an idea what we were doing. I've only ever been in hospitality, so we didn't go in blind, but there's so much difference between thinking you know and the actual doing.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about the business that you took over and sort of what the first year was like and how you sort of changed it to be yours.
So it had been a cafe in lots of different varieties for, I think, 20 years. By the time we got there, it was pretty run down. Food was, I don't want to say anything bad about anyone else, but it wasn't very inviting and there wasn't a lot going on there, but it was a beautiful space. It's got a big veranda around and gardens outside and jacaranda trees. So it was a really nice spot to dream about what we could make it. The first year probably involved a lot more cleaning than the first few months. it's all those things you don't take into account. And we opened on the 4th of December, so just before Christmas, during COVID, probably the worst possible time you could choose. If you had to choose, you'd never choose that.
Tell us a little bit about Highfields. It's just outside of Toowoomba there in Queensland. What's it like there and what are the food offerings like?
It's growing. It's quite small, but there's so much development happening. So just in the last few years, there's been some breweries opening. So there's not a lot to offer out there at the moment, but it's growing and I can see a good future for it food-wise, hopefully.
I want to talk a little bit later about what you are doing there and your food and the connections that you've made with the community. But take us back to when you were young. Whereabouts did you grow up and what sort of role did food play?
So I'm from Bairnsdale in Victoria, East Gippsland. We probably would never, no one would have considered us a foodie family, but what's the best? So my dad is a welder. He builds boats primarily, and we're half an hour away from Lake Entrance, which is a huge fishing. So we always had interesting, different things. We had all different kinds of seafood, and Mum cooked everything from scratch. We didn't have anything takeaway, like our lunch boxes. We were jealous of all the other kids with their packets of things, but everything was made. But it was never in a, that's just how we did it. It wasn't, you know, we're a foodie family. And we always had veggie gardens, and there was always, you know, we never had store-bought sauce or anything. Homemade sauces and relishes and jams and everything. So it was just a bit ingrained rather than, yeah, something we ever considered.
Is there a dish or a feast that you remember from when you were young that sort of really stands out in your memories?
I can't think of a specific dish. We probably do the feasting more so now that me and my siblings are in charge of all the food. But no, when we were young, it was just like every Sunday we'd have a barbecue at my grandma's house and everyone would bring something. And there was often odd things like mutton birds or rabbit or just not the standard things that are at a Sunday barbecue. Yeah, so we had we were exposed to lots of stuff in a roundabout way.
You mentioned that you haven't done anything other than hospitality. When did you first sort of get an interest in food and sort of step foot into the hospitality sector?
Well, it wasn't because I had an interest. I didn't finish school, as seems from listening to the show, many chefs don't. Just wasn't my thing. And I got offered a job from a friend's mum. She was opening a restaurant and I was friends with her daughter and we said, okay, let's be apprentice chefs. So I always thought I would do something else, that I was just doing that for now. But that was 25 years ago or something and I'm still doing it. So, yeah, that was in Bairnsdale. And then I ended up moving to Hervey Bay. We've got family there and was at Kingfisher, the resort. Yeah, so did some of my apprenticeship there. That was a real eye-opener. I'd never been in a, you know, big brigade kitchen. So that was fun, a big learning curve.
What sort of venues and people sort of made a big impact on you sort of as you built your career?
Well, I've been a bit of a – I've stayed in the same jobs for a long period of time. So once I left Hervey Bay and then I moved to Brisbane, I was in a cafe there and I was there for a few years. I was supposed to finish my apprenticeship, but they asked if I wanted to run the kitchen, and of course you want to take that better money when you're a third-year apprentice. So I did that, and from there ended up moving to Toowoomba. Where I had a bit of a break. I had two kids. So I didn't actually work in the industry for about 7 years, but I was doing private catering for weddings and functions and things. And then finally at some point decided, what do I really want to do? You know, what I can do anything. I can study, I can retrain. And I kind of, you know, people are always looking for their passion. And I'm a bit slow because I've been doing that all my life, but I realised I cook at home for fun. I only watch cooking shows and read cooking and went, oh, hang on, you're already actually doing it. So I went back to TAFE just to RPL so I could finally have that piece of paper that says I was an actual chef. And the woman I spoke to there said, oh, working at Wenlands, you should come and work with me. We're looking for someone. And I just kind of said, I've got two little kids. I can only work school hours. I don't think that'll work. But I went in and had a chat with the owner, Carsten, and was there for 9 years. But that was really, that was probably where I got a great education. Wenlands is a bit of an iconic place in Toowoomba as far as he's been there for 20 years. And it, European deli, all the cheeses, and I have a fair bit of free rein there to do. We just had a cabinet. It was a cafe, but I could put whatever I wanted in there. So that was fun. That was a good job.
How did you meet your business partner, Joy? You mentioned at the beginning, but you guys had this vision of creating your own venue. How did you guys come across each other?
At Wenlands, actually. She had a more of a business background, but she'd ended up there. No hospitality experience, but the boss asked her if she could do breakfast on the weekend. And she said yes. So we met there, and yeah, that conversation of what we would do in our place just went for years. I think we talked Relish into existence. We willed it to happen.
Tell us a little bit about what it's been like sort of creating the venue, and when you sort of finally found your feet and it was sort of what you wanted it to be.
Well, we weren't looking to reinvent the wheel or do anything crazy. We just wanted, we wanted the kind of cafe that we wanted to go to. So if you just wanted to get good breakfast, it'd be perfect every time, and a few interesting things on the menu that keep you wanting to try something else. We made the bold declaration that we were going to make everything in-house, which we've got a huge cake cabinet. And we've actually made it happen. We make everything in-house. It's, yeah, all of our cake. Joy does a lot of the baking. She's a bit of a wizard at that kind of stuff. But, yeah, that's really grown to be. People really appreciate being able to go out and have a really good selection of homemade things, you know, nothing from a box or not the same thing that you're seeing in every other cafe. We do lots of really, I consider them kind of old school things, but people really, you know, people love a hummingbird cake or a piece of date slice or, yeah, so we're really happy that we, when we said that we'd do that, we didn't really take into account the amount of time that it takes to be baking at that level. But, no, we've done it.
What's the response been like from the community as you built this business there?
That was something else we said, you know, in our what we wanted it to be like, was to make somewhere that people felt taken care of. People come in for all, you know, you never know when someone walks in the door if they've just had really bad news or something terrible has happened and or something good. So we wanted somewhere that people could just felt like they were being really taken good care of. And again, you don't know what that means when you're talking about it until it's happening. And we've got customers now that they're onto their second babies that, you know, they've been coming in since, you know, the little ones were born. We've had people lose their partners and get really sick and, you know, we've cried with them and celebrated and just, you know, our customers tell us that they love us. that kind of thing is really special to us. It just is. I don't think you get that everywhere. I've certainly never felt the need to tell someone that I love them because they were making me coffee. So it's really, really nice that we've been able to have that kind of impact and response, yeah, from the people that come to us.
Relish has become a real hub of the community there. What makes a great cafe? Like, there's so many elements to a cafe and it's such a low average spend as well. But how do you get it right?
That's a great question and I'd love to hear the answer. when we first started writing the menu and everything, I'm like, and we're not going to have this and we're not going to have that. But we're really responsive to what our customers ask for. I think being able to provide what they're looking for is, well, that's the biggest thing for us. And try anything. We've tried a few things. We tried to open on Friday nights, and that worked for a little bit and then died off. So we stopped doing that. Just keep trying things and see what sticks. Something we've started a supper club. That was probably just over 12 months ago. I had this, we'll make a set menu and we'll charge a fixed price and everyone can come at the same time. That'll be really easy for us. and that's actually turned into my little pride and joy. We got it to a place. I said something really stupid early on. I said, I really hate having to have this menu prepared. I wish people would just come and eat whatever I serve them. And we do that now. We don't release a menu. If people have dietary requirements, they can let us know. But generally, they've got no idea what they're coming to get. We were a bit ambitious at the start. So I've capped it now at only about 20 covers, which is little, but we can do that on our own with one of our juniors. So it's really manageable.
What sort of impact has that had on your cooking and that sort of ability to sort of show people what you're capable of?
Well, the first, that's the one we just, the one we did previously was a bit of a redo of the first menu. Because the first one, I think I cried. I was so stressed. it's like you've done these things 1,000 times before, but this one was special to us and really wanted it to work. It was really personal. So we redid that menu with a few tweaks last month. And the difference now is we can sit down and have a wine mid-course with the people that come. Most of them come every single month. They don't miss one. And then the new people that come along can just feel, it's like going to someone's house and just having a really great time. So when new people come, they really get that, oh, this is fun, this is relaxed. And I'm easy with it now enough that I think last time I decided to throw an extra course in mid-service and everyone was happy with that. So we've come a long way.
Tell me a little bit about your approach to cooking with these supper clubs. Is there a dish or two that sort of exemplifies the experience people are having?
I'm a terrible planner. I've just got stacks of notebooks with random scribblings in them and trying to get all of that into it. So there's not one thing I'll go, I'd really like to do. We do an arancini with a mushroom pate and I really feel like eating that. Okay, so that's going to be one of the courses. What would go well with that? And then I'll just go and wander around the butcher and the fish supplier and wherever else I go to try and get a little bit of inspiration. But sometimes we're just deciding the day before, we'll throw this together. It's not the best. I wouldn't recommend anyone else operate like that, but it works okay for us.
You also provide catering as well. What's that been like, and what's the offering there compared to the cafe?
So our catering is, we do lots of grazing boxes, morning tea, afternoon tea kind of things, but we've ended up having people come to us and go, I'm having a dinner party. Can you supply everything for that? And then that's just a case of talking with them about what they feel like they'd like to serve. I find most often when people approach you, they've already got an idea. So I would normally say back to them, what are you hoping that I'll say? And they'll end up leading. But we've done a couple of, we've got one client and we've done her last two Christmases. And that just blows me away that such special occasions in people's lives and they want us to provide the food for that, which to me is the most important part. But that people want us for their special occasions is just that gives us a real thrill.
What's the sort of dream of Relish like compared to the realities of it? Tell us a bit about what surprised you about sort of running your own business like this.
Oh, how much time everything takes. Because we both work in the business as well. So even just being the chef, that's a full-time job. Joy's front of house, that's a full-time job. And then it's everything else as well. She does all the books side of it, the serious side, which is wonderful for me. And I do all the marketing, and between us, yeah, we do everything. We don't really outsource much at all. So just the amount of time it takes, every time you think, oh, I'll just quickly, you know, find some new packaging for this new product. Okay, well, that's going to take half a day. So, yeah, we never thought sourcing packaging would be such a time-consuming, detailed drama every time you set out to do it.
Has Relish sort of changed you? What sort of impact has it made on you personally?
It's a really tight-knit little family. My son is my apprentice. He didn't set out wanting to be a chef, but he finished school at the same time we were opening. And he said, well, I'm going to work for you anyway. I may as well do an apprenticeship and make it worth my while. And that's amazing. We work beautifully together. But as far as Relish changing us, I guess you don't know what you can do until you're doing it, and what you're capable of, and even what's important to you. I think, you know, as a chef, you think, oh, it's my food that's so important, but it's actually the way my food might make someone feel that's more important now. Not me being able to flex or do anything. It's just how it'll be received by someone. And, you know, if that can touch them in a special way, that's really important.
How's the working relationship with Joy? You guys were friends and had worked together, but now you run a business together. Does it have its challenges?
Yeah, we've had our moments, definitely, but we know each other well enough probably to know when, all right, you need a bit of space. And we've probably gotten really good at vocalizing things better over the last couple of years, not just never assuming that you know what the other one really means. You have to ask. As soon as you're trying to work out what someone's thinking, you're doing it wrong. Communication is really the only thing that works.
We've built this amazing business there. What's the plans for the next sort of year or two for you?
Funnily enough, at Relish, we make Relish, and there's been such a demand for it. We're just, as soon as I get into gear, we're going to start getting that made off-site. We've got a producer that's going to do that for us. We'd like to get a few of our products online so we can get Relish out there into the world. And just, you are always looking for different ways to make money in an industry that's not going to make anyone rich.
Do you have a signature or favourite Relish among the types that you make?
At the start, I'm like, oh, it's got to be special. It's got to be different. I've got to be able to put my stamp on it. And the one that is the most popular is the absolute just standard, probably what your grandma used to make. And that's what everyone goes nuts for. So that's what we're going with. Again, that's that. Well, it's not about what I think I might want to do. What do the people want? But that's come about. I think so many people aren't making stuff at home anymore. You know, it's not the norm to just whip up your own sauces and relishes and chutneys and things at home. So something homemade, people love it.
Can you, without giving your secrets away, can you tell us how to make that sort of the Relish that's so popular?
I think I said before I'm terrible at writing things down. For someone that's been doing this for so long, I can't write a recipe on paper to save myself. So we're going through a process at the moment, my son and I. I'm making it and measuring as I go, and then he's remaking it to see if it's actually the one. So at the moment, the secret is trial and error until I can get on paper what I put in a pot.
What do you love about what you do?
Everything. I don't think I can do anything else. I'd love to say something. I just love cooking. I love what we've built, what we can build, that we can sit and still talk really excitedly about things that we still want to get done and what our next thing could look like. It's just our absolute passion.
Well, Hayley, look forward to seeing those relishes on shelves across Australia. It's an absolute honour to have you on Deep in the Weeds today to hear just a part of your story. Please keep in touch and we'll catch up again soon.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me.
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. Stay tuned as we take a deep dive into the lives of the incredible people who ply their trade in the food and hospitality sector.
Special thanks to executive producer Rob Locke for making this all happen.
Follow us on Instagram at Deep in the Weeds Podcast or email us at podcast@deepintheweeds.com.au.
Stay safe and be well.